Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Excellence Cartel. Today, we have Alex Keuchel, Kickle, or Asshole is what he told me to say before we went live. Didn't matter. He was not picky about his last name, but he's joining us today. We're going to talk about the best steroids and PEDs for females. We're going to be talking about bodybuilding, figure, striking sports, strong woman, powerlifting, all sorts of different things. Alex is a wealth of information, and I actually learned he has a really cool mentorship he's doing, which we're gonna get into at the end of the conversation. But first, Jason, since Jeff was a little late, I'll let him warm up for a minute because he looks like he's getting pumped up. How was your last 7 days, man?
It's been good. Took a short little trip to Florida to visit Aria's mother, kind of have early Thanksgiving. We made Christmas cookies. I ate too many of them.
You're fat.
But Florida, yeah.
Disgusting.
But Florida, it was Jacksonville, and so it's not quite south enough. And then there was a cold streak coming across the country. So it was like 50s and 60s. It didn't really feel like Florida, man. But it was nice to get away because, I don't know, when I'm at home, like, I always have, like, kids' games and different things to get to. I slept in one day till like, 9:45, and I don't know when the last time I did that. So that was nice and kind of recharged my batteries a little bit. Other than that, you know, kind of just business as usual, really. Nothing really, I think, to report or anything like amazing going on. My natural female bodybuilder did hit the trifecta. She won every show she entered.
Nice.
What do they call it? I'm blanking on titles, but one, it was a cool title. But anyway, so that was cool to see that come to a fruition. It was kind of the goal we set out to do. That's about it, man.
Is my mustache growing on you?
Not really, but I'm just not a mustache fan. I mean, it's cool if you like it. I'm an 80s kid. I remember all the guys having mustaches. I just think it's a terrible fad. But like,
I can't wait until I can
bust wear it well because you can grow it. Like, I see these dudes in the gym, and they got these thin little pencil mustaches, and they look horrific. And I'm like, dude, you aren't getting any pussy. There ain't no way. With that stash, come on, man. Like, just shave it. If you can't grow a nice thick one, don't wear that shit. Like, but
I'm glad you think it's nice and thick. I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Jeffrey Sue, how's your last 7 days been?
Last 7 days have been really, really good. I was down in Hodgepodge, New York. It's actually not called Hodgepodge. I just started calling it that. It's called Hop Pog or something.
It's close, Long Island. Man.
And, you know, I was there for my client Angelina's show. This was the contest prep that I had taken over. We had 10 weeks to pull it together. And she placed second out of seven, you know, pretty shredded, jacked women in open figure. And she was really, really happy with the results, so she signed on for off season with me, and so that's good. I was really happy for her. Obviously, I picked up my car. You know, I got the Porsche finally, so I've been spending a little bit of time on the road with it. It's absolutely a dream that has come true. I liken it to like a very heavy platinum scalpel. The way it feels on the pavement, it's just like the precision and the weight of it in your hands and everything. It's just like, it's amazing. Today I got a funny story to tell you. So I had this girl, right, in my DMs, and she was like, you know, trying to like ask for my classes. She was like, oh, well, how much are your classes? I was like, yeah, they're $500 for the bundle. Then they went on sale again. They're like, how much are your classes? I'm like, they're $300 now. And then like no response, like no Venmo, right? And then she's like, well, how much is your mentorship? I'm like, it ranges from this or whatever. Like, I really want to do this. I'm like, okay, well, here's how much it is. Crickets, right? So then today she sends me like this book. She's like, I've been through all this like medical shit. I live in Canada, blah, blah, blah. I've wasted so much money. I heard that you were the best. Like, I really need your help. And so I was like, well, okay, well, it's $300 for a consult and we can apply it to coaching. And then she just like, you know, didn't respond. I go look at her profile and she's like in Paris wearing a Gucci belt and like all this stuff. And I blasted her on my stories. I screenshotted everything like I normally do. And then her boyfriend starts DMing me and he's like fucking pissed. And then she's like, you don't know what to do. I was homeless, blah, 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 all this stuff. And I was like, I'm sorry. I didn't know. All right. So I'll delete it. And I got on a video call with her and she was still like all aggressive and shit. And I was just like, put yourself in my shoes. when you've like tried to buy shit from me and then you just ghost, I'm not going to take you seriously. Like the fourth time you come to me.
Did she pay you for the call or did you do it because you felt bad?
I felt bad. I just wanted to call her real quick and say,
oh, that's such weakness.
Maybe it was a misunderstanding, you know, just, you know, I'm sorry. I didn't know your story. You know, I just saw your Gucci belt in Paris, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, if you want help in the future, just fucking pay me.
Wait, so you took it down?
I took it down. Yeah, I took it down.
So what's the point?
Well, because I wanted to show people, you know, don't stand for this shit. Is there people like?
But if you deleted it, are you still so? Yeah.
Yeah, I deleted it because I resolved the issue with her and I didn't want to keep it up. But I posted it and I was just like, and I posted my Black Friday sale again. I was like, don't go to Paris. Get better this weekend with knowledge instead. And I sold three more bundles. So
I just don't understand why you post it. Blast them, and then once the issues get resolved, like, why not just put up a follow-up? The issue's resolved and still leave it.
Nah, I just figured, you know, I've already made my point, and if people see it, they see it, you know. So
okay, well, that's fair.
That's why I was a little late today. I was like trying to take care of all this shit.
Sounds exhausting.
So did she sign with you?
No, but I sold like three more bundles. So
it was well worth Jesse's time. He basically got a what you call in marketing like a hook, and he was like, don't go to Paris. Buy knowledge instead this weekend. Like that was worth his hook. He literally took a 1 hour consult and made $1,500 or $900, whatever.
He'll never become a client, like ever, but it doesn't fucking matter.
All right. Jeffrey's customer service is very high ending 2022.
I am HR.
Yeah, you are. I am HR. That is a damn good line. My last 7 days have been good, pretty chill. Went over some strategic stuff with the team last year or for going into 2023. Like, it's really weird to think we've grown 100% and as a gym in 18 months. And like, I'm about to bust out the seams. I actually was looking through my videos last night and found the one where Jeff Sue did legs with Austin and I. Oh, and he was collapsed outside the gym. He's like, fuck you, Jeff. Like, I'm going to post it. And then, of course, I saw him in the mechanical bull where he almost got his ass whipped by the bouncer. And then like it was some good memories in there when I was going through that. But otherwise my 7 days have been bad. I'm waiting to hear if my oldest son's coming up for Thanksgiving or not. But yeah, otherwise pretty good cheek. I think I'm like you guys. You know, I think we as coaches can agree it's probably like slow time of the year in the sense like there's not as much push. This week is kind of slow. You know, it's just kind of just tidy work you're doing. And then what,
yeah,
2 weeks
like, I was start done pretty up. Early today. I got to like clean gutters and blow leaves and shoot baskets with Maddox. It's like nice out and it was nice to kind of be done early. So
sweet. Well, I'm glad you got to do that, my man. So guys, Tampa PEC 7, January 27, 28, the excellencecartel.com tickets are available. We need to start pushing that more, gents. It's about getting time. Sell that. And actually, Alex, we have to talk to you sometime because we'd love to have you join one of those because Jason and myself have been a fan of yours for a while with just a lot of your knowledge. But so asshole, how's your last 7 days been? Since I guess that's how you want us to refer to you or whatever. But no, Alex, how's your last seven been?
Amazing. So had my son Apollo 2 weeks ago. And mm-hmm. So this is that transitional period. First kid you have, as you guys know, is the hardest ever. Those first 8 to 12 weeks, you're like, how am I going to do this? Second kid, even easier. This third kid, I feel like we mastered the whole process. Me and my wife really have it down, and it's just been so much fun. And that was on top of my daughter and my other son getting sick, too, and having a stomach bug. So, and I also had some bad Chipotle on Saturday, this past Saturday. So, pooped 13 times on Sunday, and still happy and smiling.
You pooped 13 times?
Liquid.
Crazy liquid. Ooh.
That good. Yeah, I got some bag chicken. But still smiling and just really having a blast, you know, just focus on kids, family. I started my new mesocycle yesterday, so that's been super fun. I've been doing this mesocycle. It's going to be 5 times a week weight training, 5 of striking, and then trying to get up to 2 of running. I got to wait, make sure my lower limbs and that architecture doesn't get too damaged from being 250 and running and, you know, doing that kind of work because that just damages your heels a lot. So sure. Getting that up to par, but having fun.
Yeah, I posted some pictures of me and my story today of all my juiciness and was like, I'm getting ready, boys and girls. That was really, it was nice. So I understand what you mean, you know, doing all that work. I'm in a mesocycle as well for legs and it's hell. So, that's how you know it's working. All right, well, let's get into your background. So Jason and I were talking because Jeff was a little late joining me because he was talking to a woman in Paris. we were talking about knowing you from the professional muscle days on the boards, you know, Scoob, myself used to be on there, Dante, John Meadows, Rip, a bunch of guys. Jeff was even on there too, right? Jack Rabbit or whatever was yours or something.
I was Giblets.
Giblets, your giblets. Oh, that makes sense. All right. So, but we, you know, you had a lot, you built a lot of following out of there, and a lot of what you were talking about was pharmacology, and you were talking like real high level stuff, especially about growth hormone use, utilizing L-carnitine, the proper environment for that, like with insulin. There was a lot of great information you're putting out. What kind of got you into this space? And then what took you into that sub niche of pharmacology before we start talking about, you know, PED use and best steroids for women? Kind of give the audience a little background on you and what got you to be so niched out into this one little area.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So summarize, start off with bodybuilding.com forums, then went into professional muscle as you kind of make that transition, right? Back when it was still a cool forum. So ended up getting a career ending concussion in high school, actually. So I had a full ride to college with lacrosse.
Had lacrosse.
And then ended up having to say, okay, can't do that anymore. No more really damaging based sports. So obviously decided to go into trying to heal my brain because I couldn't talk or walk for 6 months after that. Got into dietetics in college. Obviously didn't like that. I shadowed the dietitian for the Steelers at the time. And it was basically, you make a meal plan of like a buffet menu and the players pick from it. And I'm like, well, that's freaking lame. I'm going to leave that. Ended up going and getting my master's in performance enhancement injury prevention. Was going to go for my PhD. And at that time, I was posting on all those forums. People just reached out, throwing money my way for coaching. I helped them for free initially. Everyone started getting results. And then all of a sudden, that turned into a viable way of making money. So I said, okay, I'll give this a year. If I make more money than I can now, I won't get my PhD. If not, I'll go back to school and I'll do that thing and teach. That took off. And then ever since then, it went from being a natural bodybuilder, competing a couple times, shutting myself down from getting so lean so many times, or relatively lean, because back then, obviously, lean is very relative. But low testosterone, had to get into that kind of therapy anyway. So I thought, if I have to take it anyway, might as well, you know, have some fun with this and kind of take it full steam. And that led into just trying to find out more for myself, because I was the conservative guy who never got any results. So I said, okay, I'm going to try 50 milligrams of testosterone. And then 75. And if I'm going to introduce Tren, I'm going to do like 10 milligrams. And you know what you see? Nothing.
Mm-hmm. Finally, someone said that, because I really want to ask you, okay, real quick, can we dive down? What's your thought of the safer stack model that's coming out?
I don't even know what that is, because I don't follow anyone, honestly. I follow my wife on Instagram. That's it.
Well, that explains it. Okay. Well, anyway, so it's like the idea of like taking, you know, testosterone 200, maybe 300, 400, and a lot of primo and a lot of mass, not doing EQ and keeping your trend down real low because it's neurotoxic and da da da. And I'm like, but no one's really looking
and neuro.
Yeah. No one's really looking better than what I know 300 milligrams, 400 milligrams of trend does versus 70 a week. It's pretty stark difference. You know what I mean? So what, like, with that being said, is there really a point that steroids do matter in the dosing, or you're just wasting your time of injecting it?
So chemical signaling, super simple concept. What's happening at the genomic level? So at the gene level, you take a drug, causes genes to do cool things. It needs enough of pressure on an androgenic signaling side of things to give you enough of a result. So you take 50 milligrams of testosterone, not really enough to push the dial, but 100, maybe 200 will. So every different steroid comes, every different androgen comes with a different amount of chemical pressure. That's a threshold concept, whereas growth hormone and insulin is more linear. So one IU does the same thing as 10 IUs. It's just 10 does it 10 times better. So if we understand that basic concept, then we have to look at people's goals. To me, the bigger your goals are, if you're a professional athlete, you better be pushing the dial, because that's your freaking job. If you're just going to be an amateur competitor, if you just want to be the guy trying to get abs for the first time or whatever, then there's no reason to push it. On top of that, just the genetic expression we all have is some people are hyper responders, some people are hypo responders. I made a big post a couple of times on that. I think it was last week on my story with a guy who's a hypo responder, guys who kind of like a mid-tier responder, and how they respond to it. Some of these guys can take a gram, 2 grams of androgen and get the results that someone on the Olympia stage gets with 100 milligrams. So there's different tiers of genetics and how you metabolize these drugs in the first place. So to me, your dosage only matters to you. Just because you take a gram and Jason takes 3 grams and Jeffrey takes 4 grams or whatever, it doesn't mean anything except to that person. They have different goals and different needs. At the end of the day, though, if you are trying to be your best, you're going to have to push it. Like, and push it, though, is relative. That doesn't mean you got to take a gram of Tren, but if you are in the need for what Tren has to offer, the aggression, the nutrient partitioning, the changes, the IGF cascades, all that fun stuff, then you know what? Tick that up from 100 to 200 to 300 to 400 and playing with things can really change some cool things.
I have a question already.
That's a really transparent answer, and I appreciate that. Most people are like, well, and I'm like, I like that.
I'll be more transparent real quick, by the way. I'm working with people right now that are on 5 grams of androgens. I'm working with people right now that are on 57 milligrams of testosterone. Super weird dose because that's his HRT and everything all in between with every other kind of performance enhancing drug you can imagine. Because that guy needs that robust response and that is his job. He's preparing for the biggest sporting event of his life. So everyone in between from 1 milligram to 5 grams, like it's all there. It just depends on the person.
Alex, all right. So my question is, how do you manage, the positive, growth anabolic effects that we're seeking in terms of using performance enhancing drugs versus the very specific epigenetic and genetic negatives that one may experience? Like, for example, right? I'm sure you've read studies where African-Americans have more expression, 5-alpha reductase expression. That's also tied to their lipids, thyroid, all that kind of stuff. They tend to have more problems in those areas versus, let's say, Asians. Asians don't have a lot of 5-alpha reductase, right? So
by that hairline.
Exactly. I've used Trend, I've used Mascaron, I've used Halo, all that stuff. I don't lose my hair, but I can't grow a luscious beard like our friend Jeff Black.
It's a mustache now. It's a mustache.
Yeah. So I don't get a lot of sides. I can run a gram of Tren. I've taken 3 grams of test a week, and I don't get any sides at all from that. So how do you manage that? Like, do you go 5 because they're good, or what about the other systems that may be impacted negatively at that dose?
That's a good question.
So that's going back to a concept called anabolic mapping. So all that is going through the systematic process of trying to figure out what you respond good to, what you respond bad to. Once you figure that out, the bad column stays away. It doesn't matter what the drug is, the good column stays in. So what I'm saying that, though, is just because trenbolone can be an amazing drug, that acetate ester specifically can affect the prefrontal cortex and the amygdala in pretty cool ways, but also pretty bad ways, depending on the person's neurochemistry. So if you respond well to Tren, you're the person who gets a red hot amygdala, but not too much. And the prefrontal cortex doesn't atrophy too much, AKA the person who someone, drives down the street and, they cut you off at a red light or whatever. You don't get mad. You're just like, yeah, it's whatever. I'm good. It's normal. EGFR maybe goes up when you take trenbolone acetate. That's the person who's obviously going to put that in the good column. The guy who responds bad to trenbolone acetate is going to see the atrophy of the prefrontal cortex that leads to bad decision making. That's where the guy says, "Oh, I cheated on my wife because I took Tren, or I beat that guy up." I've heard all these things. It's because of that neurochemical based change. He should probably not take Tren, no matter how good it is. But if he needs something that Tren has to offer, go to a different drug. So if you need the aggression that trenbolone has to offer, go to, well, maybe not check drops because that's a whole different conversation, but you can drive aggression pretty well. Like, you have all these different options to drive aggression or nutrient partitioning or whatever trenbolone does. Go find it from a different drug and see if you respond better to that. That's where I'm a big fan of polypharmacy as a whole, because if we have our androgens, we also have our peptides, so growth hormone, insulins, and then we have our, ancillary, auxiliary, whatever secondary category you want to call over there, or these all these other things like SR9009, GW501516. You could even put something like a statin over in that column of drugs that can help you in the right scenario. So to me, it's not just blasting, going crazy with the androgens, but it's picking some from every category and column that you actually need.
Real quick question on the topic of that. Yep. When you're putting peptides and GH in, do you like them to be higher and then the gear down, or does that not matter either? You're doing a mapping process of that out. And for women then, so we could kind of get going into this, transition. Is that something that you kind of utilize more, the peptide GH route, insulin, all that, as opposed to steroids? We've talked about this before, but to have your background speak on it would be even better.
Yeah, definitely. So we can do it either way. So we can either have androgens and peptides high and then androgens low, keeping peptides high. Because if we look at the cascades that they really stimulate, so the downward pressure on health, a modest amount of growth hormone insulin is not going to have any negative long-term issues. But again, it's all relative. So insulin, if you're a 100-kilogram male, we're talking for females for this conversation. Most females, let's say 60 to 80 kilograms, right? That's the rough side of most athletic females. They can work up insulin dosages pretty high and not have any negative health consequences. The cool thing about that is females obviously an estrogenic liver. So that liver sexuality difference from males to females is there. There is the less amount of muscle tissue, the lower amount of body weight, the lower amount of surface area, which changes drug distribution. All these things affect it so that a woman can take insulin and never take enough to cause actual health problems, because they're going to run into edema-based issues, jack up blood pressure, and they're going to hate how they feel, first of all, before you can even run into any long-term problem with whatever, a C-peptide, something pancreatic-based problem. So then we have the growth hormone conversation. And over there, same kind of thing with females. They're going to respond so well to such a low dosage because of the same thing we just talked about. As the dosage gets worked up, they literally will not be able to take more than 3 to 5 IUs. Most females, that's kind of a top end dose because they just can't tolerate more. If they can, cool. But it's usually like a quarter or a half an IU to like 5 IUs. More than that, and they just don't have enough muscle architecture to handle those peptides. Because remember, these somatropes, these growth hormone peptides, are very location and tissue dependent. So the more muscle tissue you have, the better they're going to work. Kind of makes sense why the bigger guys can do 15, 20 IUs and get all these awesome results. Depends on the person, obviously. But so does that kind of answer your question on the females peptide kind of conversation?
Yeah. Do you guys have anything you want to follow off on that before we get?
Well, I mean, I'll just say, I've gone on record many a time saying that if a woman will do it, I'm way more into, using GH and insulin, especially if she tells me she has very little tolerance for androgenic side effects. Then I'm right. Like, okay, well, maybe some Osterine, and then we'll drive it with GH and Slyn. And then the conversation comes, oh my God, Slyn's so bad. And it's terrible. And I'm like, it's really not, we're not going to be dumbasses about it. We'll cover your dose. But that's what it gets into. So I'm a big proponent of using the two if a female will do it, rather than just pounding down VAR and Primo and all this other shit all the time. So.
Yeah, most definitely. I put my fingers up like that because it got me really excited. And by the way, guys, when I get excited, I get a dump of dopamine. My neural transmission starts to fire a little faster. I tend to speak a little faster. So
every time I drop acid, that happens too.
There you go. It happens yep. to me naturally.
I need your head.
So you mentioned about insulin and everyone going, oh no, don't take it, all that kind of stuff. For a female, the most basic introductory cycle you can give them is literally half an IU of insulin. Couple reasons. What does it do first and foremost? So if you actually look in a basic biochemistry textbook, it opens up ion gated channels into myocytes. So it takes amino acids, puts it in muscle. That's pretty cool. What else does it do? Its first action through phosphatidylinositol-3 kinase and AKT downstream through the rehab proteins drives what? mTORC1. What's that? It drives muscle protein synthesis. You can go through and see, so pre-workout insulin, everyone loves to take it for the hemodynamics and the change in the pump and nutrient partition. What else does it do? If you look at glycolysis, so the process of glucose to pyruvate to CoA, look at the enzymes involved in glycolysis. Look at phosphofructokinase 2, that gets inhibited by glucagon, potentiated by insulin. What does that mean? You can recycle ATP faster by using insulin. So you get a better workout. That's why sprinting athletes, marathon athletes, strongmen, striking athletes, men and women, that's why they're all taking insulin in every sport, because it can recycle ATP and do all these other cool things. So the women or men or whoever's out there who's hearing, oh, insulin's bad, take a quarter of an IU, take half an IU, like take as small as you possibly can, feel comfortable with it, and then slowly work it up based on how many carbohydrates you have and the real goal that you're trying to achieve. But it's not something to fear. Obviously, you have to be careful to cost you with it. But if you're taking drugs, I'm assuming you're an adult and you're kind of making these adult decisions anyway.
Sure. No, I like that. I mean, obviously you've studied this and you know the like biochemistry behind it. I'm still a little bit more closer to the bro side where I'm like, this works. It's left side.
That's what you need, though. That's exactly what you need. Because as much as I love reading the literature and reading baseline textbooks, you have to have the application common sense. So to me, I always say you have the application common sense, you read the studies, and then you read the books and understand the basics. You have those three things, you really can't go wrong. It doesn't matter how good something looks in a textbook or on paper. If it doesn't work in reality for athletes, who freaking cares?
That's a good point. Jeff, Sue, you have anything or you want me to?
Keep going for now.
Okay, let's go. Let's talk about let's start breaking it down.
Paris.
Say what?
I grew in Paris, though.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. With what are some of the best steroids then? Let's quantify best. You've already talked about like finding out what's best for the person. So where would you start with a female? And is figure the same as bodybuilding, is the same as physique, as the same as bikini? Would you do the same mapping, or are you specific to the divisions that they want to compete in?
Yeah. So look at it as goal oriented, not sport oriented. So we have a female who's a physique competitor in any of those categories, a female who's a strong man, a strong woman, a female who is a powerlifter, a female who's a sprinter. Look at what they need and backwards reverse engineer it from there. So if we look at the androgen-based category, we have all these different things that can essentially drive protein translation transcription. So the ability of gene to spit out a new muscle fiber, spit out receptor and drug, and then uncouple and do its other fun stuff, but essentially drive muscle building. That's all protein translation transcription. All androgens do that. The exotic ones do it a little bit more and harder and better from an overall intrinsic efficacy standpoint, but that's trend DHB. That's not for this conversation. For the females, we're trying to see things that we can drive all these positive aspects of drug usage without getting the negatives. Guys, we don't care if we masculinize. It doesn't matter if we have, you know, a better handlebar mustache. Well, maybe it does. But for women, obviously, that doesn't really matter. So the masculinizing side effects are very big. Certain women at the top end of their sports maybe don't care about having the enlarged clitoris or the, you know, facial hair growth or the hypertrophy of the vocal cords and things like that. But generally, we're trying to avoid masculinizing side effects. If we look at those that are generally the least offensive to females, it's nandrolone phenylpropionate. It is going to be baseline athletic HRT dosages of testosterone, so very, very on the load replacement side of things. It's Anavar, Primobalan. Mastron's a weird one where women, it's probably like 80% of women just don't respond well to it. You'd think they would be more estrogenic creatures, like it would help them a lot, but it's like 80% really don't respond well. The other 20% respond amazingly well to it, but again, kind of depends on the person. But you're just shopping for what we need from them. So what's the big goal? And you're fixing with that. So Anavar is pretty cool. It can actually impact the prolactin cycle. It can act as like a faux glucocorticoid. So it can manage that glucocorticoid receptor. So if cortisol is a problem, you could bring an Anavar for that. If you're looking to just drive protein translation transcription, so just build muscle, nothing else, some changes to neuromuscular junction with insulin sensitivity, that's a Primobalan. If you do use the Mastron, there's that management to estrogen. There's more neurological activity, so it can drive up more motor learning. Again, higher neuromuscular junction activity, higher insulin sensitivity. Another cool little fun fact, DHTs drive up a lot of positive gut overall health cascades. So I've actually fixed people's guts with low doses of DHTs, drives up photosensitivity, so it can improve your sleep. You need less sleep. Lots of cool things, but either way, moving on to nandrolone phenylpropionate, that can give us some articular cartilage synthesis. So the sore knees and joints, they can train harder with them, get a little bit more intramuscular ion, glycogen fluid, and nitrogen retention. You see where I'm going with this? All these drugs have different characteristics. So if you just write down Anavar, write down everything it has to offer, and do that with every single drug, and then say, okay, athlete B is a female. She's 80 kilograms, and she needs this, that, and this. You just go and you shop through. Doesn't matter as much on the sport. The only time it does matter on the drug of choice is really in the final weeks of a contest prep for physique competitors. So if you're trying to get more of a full, round, robust look, still softer and slender, or if you're trying to get more of a dry, grainier, harder look, you can choose different orals to manipulate those. But in general, it's more find the problem, fix the problem with the right drug, more so than the category of the sport.
You guys have any questions?
I'm a big fan of FPP with women.
All right, let's get into that. Why?
I mean, the results, I see them put on more size, and maybe it's just the ones I have that have just responded really well to it. But the side effects are low. They put on, like I said, muscle like crazy with it. So it's something that I've really leaned more towards even than like Primo. You know, like if they're ready for an injectable and they want to grow, I've been leaning more towards with the MPP. Than even like, you know, like I said, the Primo, but again, it could just be the ones I have are just hyper responders to it. I don't know.
No, you're right though. So if you look at gestation, so obviously I have three kids, I want to make sure if we go into the, you know, the operating room for a C-section or have a baby, I know all the ins and outs. One of the things you learn in the early stages of gestation is that females will drive a lot of that 19 nor downstream metabolite. So it's already part of their biological system. So having a 19 nor in play is going to be less masculinizing because it's already in a feminine environment and they're used to actually uptaking that specific breakdown of testosterone.
Okay. Nice. Okay. So again, that's where I see what I see and I know what to put it, but I wouldn't have been able to explain that part. So having that piece is nice. So thank you.
Yeah, definitely. And again, that's why I'm kind of trying to bridge the gap between understanding an application, because again, as much as cool as it is to have all this basic information, I could rattle off cascades for days. Doesn't matter if you don't actually know to apply it. So it's always trying to explain it and then also trying to say, this is how you actually use it. Because if you listen to this podcast and get nothing from it, then it really doesn't matter if you didn't learn.
Sure.
Oh, so I have a question. So if you have a female competitor, let's say a figure or a physique or women's bodybuilding competitor who comes to you and says, to hell with my femininity. I don't care if I have like a 3-inch clit. I don't care if my voice drops. Like, I just want to get huge and I want to win. So what sort of an approach are you taking? Like, you know, if we can get a general sense, I know it's different individual to individual, but drug wise, where are you going to take that?
Definitely. So that happens more often than you would think. And you always have to make sure you're gauging the person like, okay, how serious are you and what's your real potential? Yeah. You have a woman come to you and she says this because she sees the prize of being Miss Olympia. We'll stick to the physique category for now, or you know, whatever. Does she really have that opportunity? You have to be very honest as the coach, as I know you guys are. So you go through that, do your due diligence, and then you say, okay, if she has the genetics, she's mentally and financially ready to accept all those consequences, treat her like a small male. You bring testosterone dosages up. So we'll talk about athletic HRT for females and hormone replacement with that, but you would bring the testosterone up and you would literally treat her like a male. The only difference would be because as you start to androgenize or whatever that actual word is, I think I'm making that word up there, as you turn them more into men with those muscle bellies, their liver sexuality changes, their ability to process drugs downstream and upstream changes. So now all of a sudden they put on a muscle tissue where they're, you know, dwarfing me and you guys, like, okay, you're now a male biologically. You've been born a female, you're basically a male. And this is actually really cool if you get into the transgender community. I've helped a lot of people in that community switch from male to female, female to male. And it's really cool to actually see those changes. And you can see, oh, wow, that's why women bodybuilders masculinize so much and just kind of paints a better picture when you understand that. So you basically treat them like a small male.
Alex, since you work with that community as well, and I do as well, have you ever noticed that early in their journey, you have to diet them more like a female, but as they get into more peds and get more muscle on, the protein can go up more like a man and don't have to be at these 135s, 140 ranges. Have you noticed that as well?
So from female to male transition?
Yes.
Yes, most definitely. That's something where it takes a good, I'd say there's maybe a 6 to 12 month lag time in genetics. And it does depend on the person, but that genomic expression, like think about it as you're always a female for all these years. And all of a sudden you're changing it pharmacologically. It's going to take some time to change those biological cascades, but generally 6 to 12 months. Then at the end of that year, you could sometimes never have guessed that they were ever a female at one point.
Yep.
Huh. Okay. So we've talked about the divisions and that. I'm interested in combat sports. How's that different with those women who are getting ready for that? I think that audience would probably appreciate that because that's real outside the wheelhouse.
Yeah, definitely. So remember how drugs change based on the environment they're introduced to. So the more energetic you are, the better you're going to handle subatomic particles. Again, instead of going crazy, understand and think about it like this. If we have two balls getting lobbed back and forth, we'll call them protons and electrons. If you're doing them nice and slow, you can catch them easier. It's no big deal, right? If you start throwing them really, really fast, they go off in different directions. They're going everywhere. You're missing them. Missing those protons and electrons is what causes protein misfolding. That's what causes all the negative health consequences. That's what causes all these negative deleterious effects. So, where's I going with that? What was the question again?
Combat sports. How's it different?
I was getting off on a tangent. Sorry about that. So, The better your energetics are, the better your energy systems are, the easier that handling of protons and electrons is. The reason why that's important is because the better you can handle the subatomic particles and oxygen, the better response you can get from these drugs. So all of a sudden, think about combat sports. What do they need a lot of? They need a lot of recovery. Think about punching of someone or the grappling or all those high-tier motor unit skills involved in that. You're seeing the somatotropes really come to light. You're seeing all the antigens come to light. Everything starts to become more applicable because they have such a high level of energetics. They can dismantle drugs better than anyone and not get negative side effects. Look at female CrossFit athletes. They can take Anavar by the god and not get any negative side effects because of their high tier energetics. So if we're looking at striking-based female athletes, they respond extremely well to obviously insulin. So driving up that recycling of ATP, post-workout insulin to drive up restorage and recovery, because those are two big things. Growth hormone can come in at a couple different places depending on where you need it. the growth hormone before bed with that nocturnal release into the circadian pattern of thyroids, of melatonins, and all that fun stuff is kind of like the best time to drive recovery and growth. But also post-workout, if you wait about an hour, get that 23, 24 kilodalton release of growth hormone, you could drive up more recovery that way as well. So depending on what that woman needs, insulin and growth hormones can be timed at different times of the day. But almost every female athlete every female striking athlete is going to be growth hormone, insulin, and then think energetics. What drives energetics really well? Testosterone, right? It drives spinal cord acetylcholine recycling. So you can think better. You can remember your skills better. It turns off that Golgi tendon organ stimulation so you can go past failure. It does all these cool things from a phlebotic aspect. So you have more oxygen, or rather more blood carrying oxygen to oxygenate tissue. All of a sudden you see, what does it sound like? The basic bodybuilder, testosterone, growth hormone, insulin. That's actually perfect for the female striking-based world because we need a high amount of energetics and high amount of recovery. And then you can pick and choose some other things as well based on if they need more body weight, less body weight, more neuromuscular junction changes to learn something better, a lot of different things.
That's pretty cool how you could differentiate all that out like that. I think some coaches who are listening definitely learned something because I did right there. I didn't think about it until you really started making it. But I do want to ask you a question about growth hormone.
Yep.
Is there a certain dose that, unless even asked for men, that it gets where it's just not even reasonable? Because you just said before bed, post-workout, and then there is, you know, the pre-workout window. Is that even good to use? What about fasted? You have all these windows of use. Are you coupling it with insulin then to blunt the blood glucose spike? Like, how are you administering this in women and I guess men? So that way the audience can see the difference of how you might approach the two sexes.
Gotcha. Yeah. So first of all, growth hormone as a whole. So again, operates on a linear concept. So you take one, two, I use works two times better, three is three times better. And that's for all cascades. So the longevity dosage for growth hormone, people say, what, like one or two I use, I think that, that just means that you're only driving all of the effects one or two I use. It doesn't just affect your dermal layer. These somatotropes go to where damage is being done. So I think this was a year ago. I actually used Nair on my testicles because I thought too much hair. I can't shave them. Let's just use Nair.
Holy shit.
I burned off all the skin on my testicles on my nice
ass. Oh my God. I bet your balls had to hurt so fucking bad, Alex. Like, okay. I want to cradle your balls and just cry with them right now. Cause I mean, that had to felt real bad.
Well, they were terrible. Like, it was one of the worst pains of my life. I had that fan actually in here. If you can imagine me bent over naked with my butt fan on them. It hurts so bad. But you know what the first thing I did was I took one IU of growth hormone every hour after that happened. And instead of taking a week or 2 weeks to recover back to normal, it's recovering in like 3 days.
How did you deal with all the water retention and all that shit and all the bad negative side effects you hear of GH?
So it just depends on the person with the dosage. Like, that's my drug of choice. I've taken up the 20 I used for brief stints, and I literally just felt better. I got leaner. I got healthier. Literally, my EGFR went up. My heart rate went down. My blood pressure went down. Like, I just responded.
What about your blood glucose? Does it work okay on that?
Oh, I was at 78 or 82, something like that.
What the fuck?
That's me. That is my drug of choice. If I'm trying to blow up like crazy, that's it. That's not everyone, though. So you have to go through the anabolic mapping process and see, okay, where do I fall at? Most bodybuilding males will fall between 4 to 6 IUs because less than that, they just don't get any negative side effects. More than that, they just accumulate too many negative side effects. If we go into the male world of strongmen powerlifters, their energetics are worse. So they're usually about the same, if not less, but they can take more to drive up more leverages and demon and things like that. The male CrossFit athletes, the male striking athletes, they can go 12, 15, 20, because they need all that recovery. Because the story of the ball sack was they go to where they need to go. So if you're causing myotrauma, dermal trauma, whatever, these somatotropic proteins are going there. Go to the female side of things. We said basically, you know, a quarter, a half an IU to 5 IUs. Again, it changes based on the person and how good their energetics are. So no matter what, with everyone, you're doing your anabolic mapping process of start off with the lowest possible. And I make it simple. Every month, go up by one. Or a quarter or a half if you're a female. Find whatever works with you financially and go from there. Because it takes about 2 weeks to accumulate a negative side effect, about 2 weeks to drop it. So if you do that, you can work up a female in any sport from quarter of an IU to half an IU, and half an IU to maybe a full IU. Then the next month, you go to 2 IUs and slowly work up based off of that. And once you start getting the first thing that happens is the edema. Edema kicks in, blood pressure goes up, and then you're sleeping and that hand falls asleep at night and just crushes all their sleep scores. That's whenever we say, nope, no more. We're going to pull back one IU, get the fluid off, and then kind of stick with that dosage. But in general, yeah, you're going through that anabolic mapping process of how much can I tolerate once I fall, once I find the highest maximum dose that I can't tolerate, pull back one IU and kind of stay there for men and women.
Is there a benefit to time it though? Or I know Jeff Black and I have had this debate, or is it systemic? Take, you know, say five IUs is your dose. Is it better to do one waking, three pre-workout, and I don't know what's left, one bedtime? Or is it better to just take it all in the morning and you're done and it's in your system?
So you're talking to the guy who wrote the Somatropic Bible. That's my ebook. Shameless plug right there for everyone.
Yeah, there you go.
No, get the book. The damn L-carnitine one was legit. So I'd recommend that all day.
This one's even better. I talked about placental growth hormone and everything that you probably never wanted to know, but I wanted to find out anyway. Manufacturing, all that kind of fun stuff. I actually went out and found all the patents in the manufacturing process, and they're really bastards out there online. Sorry for swearing.
You say what the fuck you want.
Tell you, what's that?
I say you say where the fuck you want. It's not a kind of podcast. Yeah, cuss word.
I try not to swear anymore because I have kids, so it's very rare that I actually.
Good for you. Good for you, man. I am not setting that fatherly example, but good for you. My kids are older, so I can get away with it.
At my daughter's 3.5, son's 1.5, and now the other one, another son, is like 2 weeks old. So I'm going to keep it PG for a little bit. But going back to growth hormone, it very much matters on when you time it because it's the same as insulin. It's timing dependent and real estate dependent. So depending on the environment you introduce it to, it's going to work differently. So let's break down growth hormone. Excuse me. This is for men and women. Before bed, we have a release of 22 kilodalton growth hormone. So that's the big daddy player that gets all the love in the literature, and the other ones really don't. But that's the one, if you're taking your growth hormone product, I'm pointing to my fridge because it's right there. If you're taking your exogenous growth hormone product, that's a 22 kilodalton variety. There's other forms out there. There's a 20, there's a 23, a 24, a 17, a 5, all these different subfractions, oligomers, and heterodimers of somatotropic proteins that make your growth hormone actually work. So in a natural circadian environment, circadian biology dictates that when our eyes get that photonic exchange from the sun, or from the moon rather, at nighttime, we get that moonlight, we get a release. So that looking and that actual process through the suprachiasmatic nucleus, all the fun stuff up here that downstream affects us myologically, releases that 22 kilodalton growth hormone, which then also potentiates a 20 kilodalton growth hormone release and all those other ones we talked about. At night, it's doing that in a high thyroidal-based environment and a high melatonin-based environment with a low heart rate and maximal oxygen saturation because we're not exercising. It's the lowest heart rate of the day in that nocturnal setting. So those somatotrophs are going to act differently. And then even cooler more at 2 a.m. 2 a.m. is the drug hour. It really is, because there's the biggest release of growth hormone and thyroid hormone. So if you really wanted to be pedantic about it, you take your growth hormone and thyroid at 2 a.m. No one's getting up in the middle of the night, so you're taking it before bed, making it easier. So that is the best time of day to get the most broad spectrum global action of growth hormone. It's going to be before bed because natural circadian biology dictates that. We're trying to put our drugs into an environment that gets complemented with, not kind of fighting against. And there's really no environment where growth hormone's bad. It's just better for one thing or another. So we have that. Taking it pre-workout. So we've all had the workout before where you're like 8 sets in, you're like, I don't feel anything. This is terrible. That's a downregulation in VEGF, so vascular endothelial growth factor. If we're going through those kinds of issues with training, we need to potentiate and improve our training. We can take a little bit of growth hormone pre-workout, drive up that sympathetic response, and drive up vascular endothelial growth factor activity. All of a sudden, that first set, that second set, you're like, well, I have the pump that I wanted. I have the contractions that I wanted. That's where you need growth hormone in the pre-workout setting. Post-workout is more, think about it, like nighttime is kind of global recovery, global everything, because it's all happening, it's actions at one time. Think about it as specific myotraumatic recovery. So you have a hard workout. If you don't care about recovering soft tissue, if you don't care about recovering neurological tissue, cardiovascular tissue, because growth hormone does heal the heart. You guys heard that, right? You can take it in this post-workout setting. I like to wait about an hour because there is an endogenous release of the 23, 24 kilodalton isoforms of growth hormone. Let them do their natural voodoo, and then we'll apply our growth hormone again about an hour post-workout. You also mentioned upon waking or, you know, before fasted cardio, things like that. It's awesome because if we understand and remember what lipolysis does, so a little tangent here, but make sure everyone understands their baseline biochemistry. We have that release of glucagon. So blood glucose goes down. Glucagon gets released from alpha-sites. We have epinephrine, norepinephrine, so all the catecholamines getting released from the adrenal medulla. That interacts with ATP. So if you look at like an adipocyte, a fat cell, if you look on the outside of an actual fat cell, there's all these G protein-coupled receptors. Basically, ATP through cyclic adenosine monophosphate, downstream through protein kinase A, dissociates from CGI proteins. You guys don't really care about this, but I just like talking about it.
I like to hear it.
releases lipase, and that's the thing where we have glycerol head and three fatty acid tails in the adipocyte. It cuts off, each lipase cuts off those tails, puts them into the bloodstream, takes it out of the adipocyte. Growth hormone is bypassing all of that and just driving that lipase interaction. So you're dumping these free fatty acids, taking those tails off the glycerol head and putting it into the bloodstream. So growth hormone in the AM setting gets that release of catecholamines to be more sympathetic and drive more oxidation. It's also driving direct lipolysis through the lipase interactions. So growth hormone is going to do different things based on the time you take it and based on the environment you're in. Low heart rate, low oxygen saturation, high oxygen saturation, so on and so forth.
Question real quick. If you say had 4 IUs of GH a day, would you tell the person to take 2 at night, 1 in the morning, 1 pre, or would you say to split out? At what point does growth hormone become not beneficial? Like, is it 2 IUs at once, 3 IUs? How do you recommend that?
Definitely. So if you want to replicate an acromegaly patient, you would dose it at every meal, which I've done in the past, and it's just not the most, you know, we'll say best way to use it essentially, because again, we talked about putting it into a negative environment. Mm-hmm. When the circadian aspect, every single meal, you're not going to be releasing all those lipases properly. So you're going to be liberating all the fat you can, but you're just going to be restoring it because you don't have enough oxidative capacity. So every meal is kind of the only, or rather the worst time to do it. And again, I've done that with people in the past, you get results. It's just an inferior way. But what we're trying to do is look at the goals. It goes back to the goals. So if your goal right now, actually, what is your goal? We'll tell it for you right now. How much growth hormone are you taking? And what's your goal? You're trying to build muscle, lose fat. What are you trying to do?
I'm on 1.4 IUs of lactose, which I think is like 2.5 IUs of GH, and I take it all pre fast to cardio, and that's it. And I'm ready to hit prep. So I have a bunch of GH sitting around, and you know, maybe could arsenal the shit out of that for a little bit, and was just curious. But I'm 42 and I'm not trying to, like, you know, and I've been using steroids more on than off since I was 18. So I guess my question would be, is it more advantageous as you get older, like Jason and me, to do more GH and to keep our test lower and like run that level? Because I've noticed as I've got older on my Oura Ring, my test, if it gets above 300 megs, my heart rate, resting heart rate, will shoot up into the 70s. Where if I'm at 200, I'm like at 52, and GH doesn't really seem to affect my heart rate. So I'm just curious, just throwing out some, you asked. So there's my, you can shoot me from the hip, and Coach Jason, who preps me, can hear.
It's perfect. So think about it this way. Androgens are going to be more effective and efficient at driving just sheer muscle gain, but they're going to have more downward pressure on overall health. Mm-hmm. Peptides, growth hormone, insulin, they're not going to be as advantageous. Again, if you just look at black and white terms here, as the androgens, but it's going to have less downward pressure on health. So it doesn't exactly work that way, but if you think of it that way, these peptides are the saviors for people. You can take these things up to reasonable. That's the key word, reasonable, because the dosage can really kill you. Reasonable levels and not have problems. So most definitely, as you get older, the IFBB pros that I work with that are at the 40 plus level, they're basically strictly on growth hormone and insulin, and then a little bit of orals or something towards the end of a contest prep, and that's it. Other than that, it's baseline athletic HRT at like 3 mg/kg total of whatever androgens we need. So most definitely on that. And for you, since you're going into a prep, yeah, put it all before your fasted cardio, first thing upon waking, because you're trying to get that massive lipase-based response to drive up more overall lipolysis. If you start flattening out during contest prep, split it to before bed and before fasted cardio, getting a little bit more driver on anabolism and recovery. That's another thing you have to look out for, because it's not just about getting shredded glutes and getting lean. It's about actually keeping the muscle you have and also getting lean. Bodybuilding, right? Not just muscle wasting. So you can pick and choose based on what results you're actually seeing.
I like that answer, because Jeff,
I want you to use 10 IU, bro.
I'll shoot the shit out of it. I don't care. But real quick, Jeff, I have a weird sleep pattern. Like, I go to bed at like 7:30 at night. I'm up at 2:33 in the morning. It's just kind of, Yeah. So, I mean, at that point, I guess it probably would be beneficial for me, because Jason and I have a hard time filling me out sometimes. And then sometimes I overshoot. So maybe me doing the GH before bed, that does make sense when you said it that way. And I was like, okay, all right. And because I take my GH fasted at like 3:30 in the morning, I work out again at 9, and I still have like some of that pump and pullover effect from it. Thank you for taking the time for that. I know Jeff's got a question, but I appreciate that answer. Yeah. Let me try it.
Alex, you just say that for your male clients that are over, let's say 40, that you don't use a lot of androgen?
More peptides, less than androgen. I do the same thing. I've gravitated towards, because it just feels right.
You use primarily GH and insulin, but so you're just keeping them on a TRT dose and you're not using, you know, EQ or DECA or anything like that in the off season?
So athletic HRT is 3 milligrams per kilogram of body weight of total androgens. So you're 100 kilograms, that's about 300 milligrams. But it doesn't have to just be testosterone. With androgens, mainly the dosage. Obviously, the players like the exotic compounds like Trenbolone, Ment, DHB, those are in a different category. But the difference in negative health consequences between testosterone, the DHTs, and the 19-NORs are all literally the same when dosage is controlled. Depending on the person. Some people get some weird side effects, but most of the time, you just control total dosage, you're going to be perfectly fine. But again, I do that for the people that are older later on in their career and they're just trying to get in one or two more shows and not trying to die. Whereas if we have an IPE pro who's 27, 35, they're like, hey, full bore, let's go win Mr. Olympia. Hey, you're kind of doing high peptides and high androgens, not year round, but whenever it's actually needed.
Really? Okay.
Guys, what else do we have to wrap up on the women? We've crossed the men, because I want to talk to you when we log off about getting you back on when we seal this up. I have a date out there, but I guess to safely say there is no quote unquote safe steroid or best steroid for a woman to take. It would be really going through this androgen mapping and just being really cognizant of what's going on with your body is what you're really trying to say. In the grand summary of all this.
Yeah, and that really is it. Because then again, we go back to the goals conversation, and I'll be the first and most honest person to say it. I've had female women take Tren in the past. It's very, very few and far between, and they're at like a couple milligrams.
Right.
Because they would not prep without it, and it's for brief periods of time. But there's a time and a place. I had a striking female athlete, MMA, and she was going for the biggest fight of her career and just so happened to not be drug tested. So she responded very well to the aggressive tendencies of Trenbolone. So, of course, we brought in a little bit of Trend towards the tail end of her actual prep, and she won her match and happy as can be. So in the right scenario, obviously, Trend's not the go-to first drug for females. Anadrol is an amazing drug for women, done at like a milligram a day, half a milligram. Like you get a microgram scale, and you were doing a small powder amount. It's all dosage and duration dependent and need.
I dig it. Jason, do you have a final question?
I do have a final question because I want to see what Alex has to say on this, because what I feel is that it works, but I've been told by other advanced bodybuilders that I'm full of shit and that I'm not, it can't act that quick. So what I like to do when I'm in prep is time my Tren right before I train, like 30, 40 minutes. I might take like 30 to 40 milligrams. The response back to me was that it can't get in that fast and there's no way I'm getting a response, but then don't take it and I'm in prep and I drag ass, my pump isn't as good. I feel like it works. So whether there's placebo or not, I do this with some of my guys who are willing to do it daily. Do you think it can work in that 30, 40 minute amount of time that I drive to the gym?
I don't think I know. All drugs have non-genomic and genomic action. So non-genomic meaning acute and genomic meaning chronic. Okay. All drugs, doesn't matter if it's ibuprofen, if it's acetaminophen, if it's Trenbolone, if it's digoxin, all the drugs out there are going to have both these acute and chronic cascades. Okay. In this environment, what you're experiencing is the neurochemical changes with Trenbolone that start with olfaction. So literally the smell of Trenbolone actually triggers this initial hypothalamic cascade in your brain.
Yeah, it does.
Go over. Yeah. Everyone knows that snow. It all starts there.
And then that cough.
Exactly. No, it does. You know, you're getting those non-genomic effects of Trenbolone because you personally dismantle it so well and so abruptly. So that's called signal transduction that can happen in a peak a second, which you can't even measure. It's that freaking fast. You take insulin, you're walking to the gym and you get that taste of the metacresol or the phenol, whatever preservative is in there. That signal transduction dismantling the drug. So you most definitely can. Not everyone gets that robust of a response, but you, however, must possess the right amount or rather right kind of enzymes to dismantle that drug faster, and you're getting that kind of acute response. So every drug out there has acute and chronic effects, non-genomic and genomic.
Cool.
I have actually a final question if you have the time for me to ask it and you guys don't mind. I think this one would be a good one. GH and visceral fat gain. So I've found quite a few literature out there and the researches that studies that say that GH actually helps burn visceral fat gain. And then I see a lot of content getting put out by coaches saying that GH can increase visceral fat gain. And I'm like, well, what does it do? In the literature, it's saying it burns it. but you're saying you get it. What is the truth? Because you're the pharmacology guy here and this is like your jam. And what should people be looking out for? And like, if they're going to play with GH, is there things they need to be looking at for that visceral fat gain to keep that at bay? How would you recommend that? Is that even true? I'm just curious because I know Jason and I have talked about this before and we were like, is it real? I don't know. I don't really think so, but maybe. Yep. So, yeah.
We rewind the conversation and go back to somatropes, growth hormones. Because when we say growth hormones, it's all of these. There's hundreds of different growth hormones in our body. They're doing everything, meaning they can do anything and nothing. I know it doesn't sound like an answer, but it is. It can cause visceral fat gain and it can reduce visceral fat accumulation.
Okay.
It's based on the environment it's introduced to. So think about this. We have person A, who's a bodybuilder, who's eating McDonald's all the time, never doing any cardiovascular aerobic based work, you know, training hard in the gym with weights. But as he's walking up the steps, his blood pressure is going up to 180 over 120. His heart rate's going up to 120, whatever. He is a dysfunctional athlete, first and foremost. So his energetics are so terrible. Going back to the proton electron conversation, he's slipping all these protons and electrons, causing protein misfolding, leading to mismanagement of this growth hormone. So instead of going off and his growth hormone, instead of going off and maybe they'll go repair some biceps because he has great genetics, but maybe it's also going to go over to the heart and start hypertrophying that left ventricle portion. Because guess what? It's causing so much stress over there. Maybe it is going to visceral fat and causing more accumulation because guess what he's having? A pretty high cholesterol, high cholesterol diet with more HMG-CoA than he can even manage. So the fatty acid downstream that can accumulate all these kinds of issues in the first place. Whereas person B over here, it is same kind of bodybuilder, male or female, whatever, doesn't matter for this conversation. They walk up the steps, they're never out of breath, they can nasal breathe properly, parasympathetic, they're oxidative-wise, they can walk outside, they're always relaxed and calm, autonomic, so heart rate, blood pressure, those are all fine. All of the somatropes, all the growth hormones are going to heal areas and also going to pull from areas to get energy to also do the healing and growing in other areas. So because that person's energetics are so good, those growth hormone proteins are going to the right places. So essentially I don't want to say the healthier you are, because that's not what it is, the better your energetics are. So autonomics and all those markers, the better your drugs are going to work and the less negative side effects you're going to accumulate. There's also the caveat though, there are people out there with just such robust genetic systems that it doesn't matter. They could have a terrible heart rate, terrible blood pressure, they get no negative side effects. But that's the elite genetics, the people at the Olympia level. Not everyone, obviously, but that's elite level genetics. So it can do both. It's based on the environment it's introduced to. So all you have to do is literally use your drugs right, which is just being a good athlete, which is just making sure your energetics are there and making sure that you're actually having the right nutrition. So doing things that athletes should be doing. All athletes should be taking some low heart rate walks outside. They should be doing some low intensity based cardio for that prolactic portion of the heart. So instead of the blood hitting against that atrial wall, smacking like a wall, it's elastic and going with it. Doing some kind of far end spectrum glycolysis based work. So they're blowing their lungs out and blowing their muscle tissues out and really taking things to that far end spectrum of work capacity. So in some way, usually athletes are having the visceral fat accumulation because they're not doing something that they should be doing. So it can do both though.
Yeah, I wondered if it was basically like the anti-cardio that you see with bodybuilders with the visceral gain, meaning like they don't want to do HIIT. HIIT will burn up their muscle. And I know for me, HIIT is the biggest game changer in my body. Like I do even six intervals. Jason and I have talked about this.
I do five every time I'm in.
And the I stay lean as shit and everything else in between. So I was just curious about that. I appreciate that answer. Well, we came up on an hour and like I said, I want to get you when we click off to sign back up if you don't mind, but yeah. Where can everybody find you at? Where can everybody follow you? Books, you know, you've got a mentorship, the whole nine yards. Go ahead and give everybody all your stuff, man. Today's episode was really, really deep and we really appreciate that. The science shit's always cool to hear.
Oh, good. I'm glad you guys enjoyed. I had fun. I worked on slowing my speech down so I didn't trip over my words because I tend to just talk.
Did great.
Well, thank you.
Do you do seminars?
I did a lot online. I'm waiting to actually do my first seminar like in person next year at the Arnold Classic. I figured it's a 3-hour drive for me. Might as well do it there in person and actually meet people in real life.
Well, sweet. If we end up doing an off PC in Nashville later in 2023, not too far away. Love to have you come present because I think you'd be phenomenal with your energy. We have like Scott Stevenson's on the one that we're doing down in Tampa again and stuff like that. So, and you have a great platform and obviously a lot of knowledge that a lot of coaches can learn from. So sorry to interrupt, but definitely was curious about that. All right, go ahead and tell everybody, man.
Thepreppcoach.com.
That's it.
Go all there, right. Find everything. My mentoring program is about making coaches better coaches. So learning how the enhanced athlete is different. So males and females, bodybuilders, strongmen, powerlifters, any athletic endeavor, this covers that. Blood work, hydration, peak week, PEDs, obviously androgens, peptides, like all of the above. We talk about absolutely everything. Talk about the nootropic side of things. Like if you can imagine, what can you do to be a better enhanced athlete? That's what the mentoring program is. It comes with monthly calls with me. So we actually go over some stuff in application, weekly reading, weekly videos. It's pretty cool if I do say so myself. So go check that out. Ebooks are all at prepcoach.com. My Instagram is, I don't even know my Instagram, Jesus. at Alex, I think, underscore KIKEL, I think maybe. Just Google the prep coach and it'll come up. It'll come up with a lot of my coaching services and then maybe some gay porn, stuff like that.
Gay porn.
Do you still have those free videos on your site or are those gone?
Yeah, I have tons of free videos. My Vimeo, I think it's vimeo.com/theprepcoach. I put out so much stuff on
Instagram. Yeah, you did. I used to watch them all the time.
Yeah, I just love educating. It's so much fun for me. And I can't possibly coach everyone. So I'm trying to kind of give back to this world. The more you have kids, the more you want to be a better person. And I'm trying to make this world a better place. And an easy way is just free education.
Yeah.
No, dude, you're very well spoken, very well to the point on what you have to say. And it's easy to understand. There wasn't anything said today that I'm like, I feel really stupid after hearing that. You really said it at a high level and then transcribed it in a way that I could walk away. And I know these guys as well and any of our audience and apply for better results. So thank you for that, man.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Cool, gents. All right. Well, I'll catch y'all next week. Peace.
Bye.